Welcome to the Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice. Welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. Today, we're joined again by Melba Pearson. Melba is the current co-chair of the Prosecution Function Committee for the Criminal Justice Section and joined us last year on the podcast in season one to talk about prosecutorial discretion. And she's back to discuss the book that she told us about at that time. So it has now been released. Can they do that? Understanding prosecutorial discretion. Melba is the editor of this book, and she pulled in a lot of different people to put together this work. So Melba, why don't you first tell us about who participated in this book?
Yeah. So, hey, Emily, thanks so much for having me on to talk about this labor of love for the last 2 years. So the book was put together partially with some of the members of our prosecution function committee, as well as reaching out to some of the main thinkers and activists around the issue of prosecutorial discretion. The goal was to have as many diverse voices as possible, and not just diverse as in racial or ethnic background, but also geography, rural versus big city offices, because again, there's different nuances that come into play with each of those offices, you know, as well as diversity of opinion. So we are lucky to have the voices of Aramis Ayala, who was the first African-American state attorney in Florida's history. And she went through an interesting time frame when she tried to change our perception of the death penalty and changed the way the death penalty was used in her office. And she received a massive amount of political pushback on that. So she goes through her mindset and sort of how she got to that point, as well as folks like my co-chair, Mike Moore, who is the elected state attorney for Beadle County in North Dakota. So he shares his perspective. So it's very interesting, and it was a very interesting project to really pull together. And like I said, a labor of love.
Great. Well, let's start off by getting on the same page for our discussion with our listeners. Make sure we're all operating off the same script. Like I mentioned, we've had you on the podcast before to discuss prosecutorial discretion, but let's assume our listeners haven't heard that episode. Will you please explain what prosecutorial discretion is?
Sure. So prosecutorial discretion is the ability that prosecutors are given by law to be able to decide what types of charges should be filed, what types of punishment should be on the table. Are you about diversion and problem-solving courts, or are you more about an incarceration mentality? What types of charges are you going to pursue? What are you going to prioritize? You know, we've seen across the country, different progressive prosecutors indicate that they're not pursuing marijuana cases anymore, marijuana possession, simple possession, and some possession with intent types of cases, meaning that you possess a large amount of marijuana, and the question is whether or not you're intending to sell, right? So there's been this movement away from prioritizing lower level crimes and really focusing more on severe crimes, crimes with injury, and crimes that are really going to affect the quality of life for the residents of your particular community. So prosecutorial discretion is that ability to decide what's going to be charged, what's going to be prioritized, and what sorts of punishments are going to be set forth as part of your administration.
Excellent. Thanks so much. So why is there a need to talk about prosecutorial discretion?
There's a need, and I thought about the issue starting most pointedly around 2014, 2015, when we had a summer or a year similar to what we're experiencing now. So we had back-to-back, you know, the Michael Brown case, Tamir Rice. There was a gentleman out in Ohio who was at a Walmart and holding a weapon, which was being sold at the actual store and was gunned down as a result. I believe his name was John Crawford, if I'm not mistaken. But there were a number, you know, Laquan McDonald in Chicago. There were just a number of high profile killings by on duty police officers. And people really started to look at these cases and say, well, why aren't charges getting filed? And that is when the power of a prosecutor went on full display, especially as so many people watched the coverage of the grand jury process in the Michael Brown case in St. Louis. We saw the power of a prosecutor go on full display, especially as a lot of people were really closely watching the grand jury proceedings around the Michael Brown case as presented by Bob McCullough, who was then the elected district attorney for St. Louis County. So those types of instances made people really start to question, well, why did they take this approach? And what about prosecutorial discretion? And how come he couldn't just file? And there was a lot of misinformation and misconceptions out there. So it really started to get me thinking and researching what was commonly available to explain to the everyday person with regards to what a prosecutor can and can't do. And I realized there's no definitive text on it, right? There were a number of different articles and think pieces, but there was just no real text that addressed this issue in a broader form to make it accessible for both attorneys as well as the average person trying to figure out who they should vote for or what they should consider when going to the ballot box for these types of elections. And as time has gone by, the need for this book has only increased, not decreased, especially as now we're going into this season of really getting more engaged around prosecutors' races in the wake of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, as well as George Floyd, Tony McDade, you know, so many other cases that we're just hearing about on it almost feels like a weekly basis.
Yes, thank you, Melba. Indeed, a very valuable contribution to the conversation, especially as many people, including our listeners, are seeking change. True change starts with understanding the process better, I think. It sounds like you agree with, and that's a big part of your motivation here. So let's talk more about the voices in this book. You already touched on this a bit, but let's repeat it again and, you know, elaborate a little bit more. So this book presents the voice of prosecutors, judges, public defenders, theorists, and advocates for reform. Can you help our listeners understand why all of these voices are important for inclusion in a discussion of prosecutorial discretion?
Absolutely. So this kind of speaks to the old adage of where you sit is where you stand, right? So when you look on the issue of prosecutorial discretion and whether or not that power needs some reform, your viewpoint is going to shift from whether or not you're an actual prosecutor, whether you are a defense attorney that's had to deal with prosecutors of varying levels of skill and varying approaches, whether you're a judge and prosecutors come in front of you, and what have you witnessed? Have prosecutors abused their power? Have you witnessed bias? So these are all aspects that have to be considered, and everyone's viewpoint definitely adds a different part to the discussion, because again, it's about giving the reader the full scope of what prosecutorial discretion looks like from a number of vantage points, because I want the reader to have as much information as possible to hold their own state attorney, district attorney, commonwealth attorney, elected prosecutor accountable at the ballot box. And in order to do that, you have to be able to understand all of what goes into being a prosecutor and what you have the power to do and what you don't have the power to do, right? So you're not holding them to a fictitious standard of something that, a metric that they can't meet in any way, shape, or form, because it's just not within a prosecutor's power, right? So it's about making sure that there's so many different viewpoints represented so that people can make an educated decision about whether or not their elected prosecutor aligns with their values and is doing the right thing. So that's why I wanted to make sure there was diverse voices. And lastly, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't prosecutors just lecturing about their life as a prosecutor. I wanted it to be balanced to really hear the voices of people who were impacted by crime and sort of how that shaped their viewpoint of prosecution, or people that were professors and studied this on a global scale and can discuss how our system compares to either our history or to what other countries are doing when it comes to upholding the law. And then lastly, the activists who are fighting for change and what do they want to see? And is that a bridge too far, or is that right in line with where we need to be as a community? And again, I leave it up to the reader to make that decision.
Again, very timely. I'm sure many people will appreciate having this resource right now. Before we move on, can I just ask a follow-up question? When you spoke to what a prosecutor can't do, can you tease for us at all some of the things that you want readers to look for in particular around what a prosecutor can't do as they're trying to make these distinctions before heading to a ballot box, and also as they're following current news events, including the George Floyd case that we've talked about, Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, as they try and follow the progression of these cases? Is there things like burden of proof or anything like that that you can tease for us that the book will help them understand better, or just the role of a grand jury and things like that?
Yeah, so I think that most importantly, I want the readers to come away with the fact that the prosecutor is able to set policy. And they could prioritize whether or not, as we looked at the Eric Garner case, whether or not they're actually going to prosecute a case where somebody's selling loose cigarettes, right? Because I think if there's a clear mandate coming from the prosecutor saying, these are the types of crimes we're prioritizing, some of this violence that we end up seeing from police officers on unarmed people, a lot of that will decrease, because if you're not arresting for some of these quote unquote lower level offenses, then there's less reason to interact, which means it's less likely to have a situation that can turn ugly, right? So as we get into that whole discussion of defund the police, abolish police, and I'm not giving opinion on any of that, I'm just saying the discussion is happening, right? So as we kind of look at that in the bigger picture, we can also look at what role a prosecutor can play in reducing the types of cases that go into the pipeline that could end up putting too much pressure on the system, which then results in some of the negative outcomes we're seeing. So definitely exploring the prosecutor's role in policy. We talk about it from the standpoint of even lobbying and how prosecutors' groups are very active in their state capitals as well as the nation's capital to push changes around prosecution. So what do we want that to look like, right? Because again, yes, you're electing your elected prosecutor to be the top prosecutor in your jurisdiction, but they're also part of a larger network that also has power in different halls of power, right? So whether it be Congress, whether it be your state capital, they're able to influence policy on a statewide and a national level. So that goes back to the importance of making sure that you're electing someone who's aligned with your values, or else we're not going to see the change that we may be advocating for on the ground through protest, through social media actions and things like that. We may not see that if we're not electing leaders who want to push that forward.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you for that. Last time we had you on the podcast, we discussed some current examples. Well, at the time, current examples from the news. And I believe this book includes some examples as well that you've mentioned. So can you share some of those examples with us?
Sure. So we talk about the work of Robert Mueller III and his work around investigating the current presidential administration around whether or not some actions were taken that were illegal or inappropriate, right? So that was one example that's featured in a book. Aramis Ayala talks about her firsthand experience trying to set policy that differed from the agendas of other power brokers in the state of Florida, most notably the governor at the time, and what that resulted in for her. So she talks about that from a firsthand level. We also talk about Steve Kelly, who is an attorney who specializes in working with victim survivors. He talks about his own personal experience of being the next of kin to a crime. So in other words, his sister was murdered when he was a young man, and this really shaped his viewpoint on justice, the justice system, and what he could do with his career to be able to help people. And some of it includes holding prosecutors accountable when they are not addressing the rights of survivors. So, you know, those are just some of the broader strokes, but definitely some of the cases, the big media cases that we have been talking about throughout this podcast today, are featured in one way, shape, or form as people either talked about the influence, the impact, or how that may have galvanized some of the work that's being done.
Well, that's a lot to look forward to. I know I look forward to reading it. So this is not the only work that the criminal justice section has put forward around prosecution. We have the prosecution standards. That's definitely meant for a different audience, but can you, for the sake of our listeners, can you share what the purpose of these standards is, and then also just how it would compare to this book, what the differences would be?
The standards are basically a roadmap. It's sort of like, here's what to do as a prosecutor. Here's what not to do. Here's what your ethical obligations are. You know, so it kind of gives you the North Star of prosecution and, you know, what you're supposed to follow to make sure that you're acting in an equitable and ethical way. The book works in tandem with the standards because it sort of highlights some of the key aspects of the standards, especially when it comes around what a prosecutor's duty is. Is it to, you know, is it to uphold the law and to pursue justice, right? But what does that actually look like? So I believe the book gives life to the standards in a lot of ways by giving real life examples and showing how some of these standards play out in a courtroom every single day across the country.
Well, thank you, Melba. And at the beginning of this podcast, you called this book a labor of love. What did you mean by that? Do you mind me asking?
It took about 18 months from start to finish for this project to come to fruition. And I'm super passionate when it comes to criminal justice reform, and making sure that the criminal justice system is accessible to everyone, right? So it's not like, well, if I didn't get a four-year degree or if I didn't go to law school, then this voting and being engaged isn't for me. I want people to be able to make educated decisions when they go to the ballot box, whatever they decide, right? I'm not saying they need to vote for one party or another or one type of candidate or another. Everything is going to differ based on your locale, based on the issues you're facing as a community, and sort of like the change you want to see in your communities. So this book is intended to give you food for thought to be able to make good decisions around these issues. And so for me, it was about putting all that I could into this, pouring all that I could into this. It took a lot of time. I basically had no free time, which was fine. You know, again, it's just, it's about the mission and about getting the message out there. So, you know, and also seeing that we had about 10 different authors, you know,
yeah.
I'm like hurting cats. I mean, they're all amazing, but they're super busy, right? So there definitely was a lot of work that went into putting this together, but I'm really thrilled about how it turned out. I'm just happy for this partnership that I was able to have with the ABA publishing arm. And, you know, I look forward to doing more projects like this to really, again, get the word out and to increase the awareness around these issues in as many ways as possible.
Well, thank you, Melba. We appreciate it. And for our listeners, I mentioned that Melba joined us in season one to discuss prosecutorial discretion, and I encourage you to go back and listen to that. It's just more insight for you as you're interested in trying to apply these concepts to investigations that you're seeing in the news to help you make sense of all this. So thank you again to Melba for helping walk us through these issues and enlightening all of us, including myself. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, as always, and looking forward to continuing the discussion.
Thanks so much. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Just Pod.